I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined by a fellow podcaster, Wendy Sparks, host of Courtside Moms, and of course, mother of Cam Birch. Wendy, thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so excited.
Yeah, for sure. First off, I got to say the podcast is really, really fun. I really regret only discovering it more recently, but as I remember, the first episode I listened to obviously was, you know, the superstar episode, of course, when you got Kyle Lowry's mom, which everyone knows on Twitter by now, especially if you're a Raptor fan. And I was listening to it at like 2 a.m. and I was like, this is such a beautiful conversation. And I just really wanted to like fold laundry and go to sleep. And I was like, I listened to the whole thing. It was so heartwarming. Hearing just two moms talk to each other, but especially obviously with Kyle's history. And of course, you do such a great job with the podcast. So I really just want to congratulate you on that, the show, first and foremost. Well,
thank you so much. I mean, it was a challenge for me to get this started and going because I didn't know what a podcast was, but I just knew that there had to be some sort of platform to allow moms like myself to get our stories out. By the time I got to Marie's episode, now night and day from my first episode all the way up to her episode, which I believe is probably like maybe 56, 57. So, and I just appreciate everything that I've learned to date.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think first off, just, you know, as a fellow podcaster, like it's really well produced. It's like, you're great. It's like very clear how much like research you like do into this. And I gotta say, like, I think, well, I want to ask for you actually, what do you find is like the biggest challenge in podcasting itself, and maybe after that we will talk about what's the most rewarding part of it as well.
Sure. The biggest challenge at the beginning was, like you said, researching, because I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. All I knew was what I wanted to get stories out, but then there's the how. And then there's what information will keep people engaged, keep my guest engaged, and keep me engaged. Because at the beginning, I was doing it live in person with the mothers. So I was living in Montreal at the time, and I actually flew the mothers to Nova Scotia because that's where the studio is. And we were sitting there live, and it was a little bit different at the beginning. But so the challenge was time, coordinating, putting it all together. And what do I do? How do I speak? But then everybody just kept saying, just be Wendy. It's so easy. And I was so nervous. I was asking questions that were so irrelevant at the beginning. Now I'm like hardcore mom, like, tell me your feelings, tell me this. Where before I was like, well, how did you feel about? Now I'm like so different that it's really, really a blessing for me now. So again, the challenge really was just a how to get started and keep people interested.
And earlier you talked about like wanting to get these like stories from the mom perspective, which I think is so unique. I think, you know, obviously with athletes, everyone talks to the athlete, everyone talks to the coach,
right?
You know, but what about the parents? And I really, really enjoy this perspective that you guys are bringing. First off, are you ever worried that you might tell a story that might embarrass Kim or anything like that? Because, you know, moms can overshare, you know, like everyone's been around each other's moms. They're like, mom, don't say that. Or, you know what I mean? Like, do you ever worry about that at first and anything like that?
I do. And the funny thing about it is some of the stories I say that I might find embarrassing, he couldn't care less. And then the littlest thing I would say, and he's like, I can't believe you said that. And I'm like, what? So like, all I said was you were cute at 7. And he'd be like, oh my God. So it's just so funny. So I never know what to say. So I always tell him, eh, you're not going to see the episode anyway, so you'll never know. And we laugh about it.
No, I'm sure he's listening. I'm sure he's listening. He's got to know.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he does.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wanted to ask you more questions about the podcast, but I really wanted to touch on the two episodes, I think, especially if you're a Raptor fan and you're checking out the show. I think the ones, you know, I would really highly recommend to check out are the one with Marie Holloway, mother of Kyle Lowry, and, of course, the episode you did with Sue Danforth, who is the mom of Fred VanVleet. Both of those were fantastic listens. Obviously, those are two very beloved Raptors, two champions as well. Let's start with Kyle's mom. What was your favorite part of the interview with her in particular?
We had a couple. So for me, it was when she spoke about the championship and how the team allowed him to hoist the trophy first. And she said it made her cry because it just really made her see the respect that the team really had for Kyle and just allowing him to take his moment and just really just love on that trophy that they all worked so hard together for, but they just stood back and allowed them, they allowed him, you know what I mean, to have his moment. And it was just bittersweet for her. So that part really touched my heart when she said it. Another thing for me was when she said at the beginning of all of this whole basketball career, she was leaning on her son, Lonnie, because she didn't understand the basketball world. And that's important as a parent because you don't know where to go. Sometimes things hit you overwhelmingly and people say, hey, your son or daughter has so much talent. And you know that they're really good at this sport, but sometimes you don't really see the level. And this could be for any parent. So she was blessed that she had her son that was like, no, mom, I got this. I'm going to help you. And we're going to do this together. So he was serving to her as a resource. And she quoted him to be like one of the most basketball, you know what I mean? For her, like the most person that has the most basketball knowledge in her world. And that really helped her. So for me as a mom, I could appreciate that because I didn't know where to go or who to turn to or who to trust.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I mean, this is probably the case for any person and every person, but especially for athletes, like, you know, the person that you see on the court, the person you see on the jersey is like almost the tip of the iceberg in a way. There's so many people that go into supporting that person. And obviously, the most important people are usually the parents, usually the moms in particular. And I think that's part of why this is such a great experience, because I think you get to really get a sense into like what goes into not just making a basketball player, not making like a successful NBA player, but like making a person as well. And I think that's always very heartwarming to listen to. And, you know, I think that's one of the subjects that you broached into with Sue, Fred's mom as well, is just sort of listening to stories about like how they grew up, you know, their family as they grew up. And I think once you learn some of these stories, right, like you get a better understanding of the people that you see in front of you and it makes you appreciate them more. What are some of your favorites from your talk with Sue?
I loved when she talked about the fact that they knew and understood that he wasn't highly recruited at the time, but his determination and her support to get him and help him was just like, for me, it's like every mom's dream. Like, you know what I mean? Like you push your kid, you know, okay, you're ranked here, but you want to be there. What do we have to do as a family to get you where you need to be? And his motto, bet on yourself, it just speaks to everything because like my son, he went undrafted. So he knew that could have been a possibility. And there's nothing worse than when you're sitting there for a very, very long time and just waiting and waiting and waiting for your child's name to get called and it never happens. So for me, it resonated very closely to me because we both had the same situation where your son is in a position and you really want them to get where they want to be and it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think I was listening to another episode where you were detailing your draft night with Cam. And I think you said that, you know, at a certain point in the middle of the draft, at the second round, you're like, you know what, it's probably better to go undrafted. You know, team doesn't hold your rights. You know, you have more opportunities to go here and there. But then there was this thought that the Raptors might come in and use the second round pick. I think it was 50, something in the 50 range.
52.
Yeah, so Raptors organization, this is your chance to apologize. How would you, you know, we think of how good the Raptors could have been if we had Cam this whole time. No, but seriously though, what was draft like night like? Obviously, emotionally, that must have been such a roller coaster to see, you know, your son in such a public moment at that time.
It really was tough because here he was coming out of UNLV, and Cam was the player. You know what I mean? He was highly ranked at the time. He was doing really, really well for UNLV. However, now when it came draft time, they were saying, you know, Cam, maybe, but this is only after the fact, maybe you might want to take another year in school. But by that point, it was a little bit too late. And there was just so much going on. And Cam was like, you know what? I'm just going to take my chances and go because I know my talent and I understand what I can and cannot do for the NBA. So all I need is an opportunity and let me do this. So when he went undrafted now, for him, it was really devastating because now I'm just seeing him feeling very defeated. So it was upsetting at the beginning, but then we sat there and I'm like, okay, listen, you do understand this isn't the end. There's other platforms that you can play on. Of course, for him, he just wanted to hear NBA. So then I kept saying, right, well, it doesn't mean that you can't play NBA later. You're just going to have to take a different route to get to the NBA. So it doesn't mean it's never, ever, ever going to come. So I think after that conversation, you know what I mean? He was just like, okay, yeah, I'm going to get up. There's no point me being more and more upset about it. Let me just push myself. And what do we do? And that's exactly what he did. He went to Summer League. He really pushed himself. He played with various teams, Brooklyn Nets, Washington Wizards, Miami Heat. Miami Heat picked him up, but then they waived him in October and then sent him to the G League, which he understood was a place for him to develop. So he was okay with it. But after a year, after a season, he was like, I just want to do something better and or different. And he ended up going overseas. So all that to say, draft night was devastating at first. But in the end, we understood that there's just another path that we're going to have to find for him to get to where he is now.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And you know, I think going overseas and then coming back, that's always the concern, right? Was that a worry for you? Like, you know, because we've seen a lot of athletes, you know, go overseas because their initial opportunities in the NBA weren't fully there. Obviously, everyone's dream is to go to the NBA. But then that journey back is so difficult. Like, can you take me through what you went through as a mom and also what Cam went through as a player in that process?
Oh, for sure. So for him, he went to Turkey, the first place, and it was scary for me because I was always just a little plane ride away, a short time span. We're Turkey now. You're the other side of the world here. So there was not, I'll be there in an hour. You know what I mean? There are to be there in two. Exactly. It was like, hold on a second now. There's a whole other process to get to you should you need something. But I understood and he understood this is what is required. So he liked it there. And he kept saying it's a beautiful place to be. But there were times where he was just uncomfortable because he thought that he was just going to be stuck there because he didn't. Right. Now he's not around. He's not in North America. You know what I mean? So he's not hearing really about the opportunities that he heard about when he was in the U.S. or in Canada. Now you hear nothing. It's just you're in Turkey. You're playing with this league and you know what I mean? Just make it great and be the best you can be. So he did at the beginning of his contract in Turkey feel that he was going to be in Europe for years to come. Then he got the opportunity after to go to Greece, and that for him just blew him away because now he was really excited. And I remember him saying to me, when the Olympiacos signed him, he says, "Mom, I'm actually going to make my first million." And I thought it was so bittersweet for him. You know what I mean? He sent me pictures. He was signing his contract. He had a 2-year contract.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. But then after year one, that's when the magic called. But it just comes to show, like, your determination. You know what I mean? You just like Fred says, bet on yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously, I think it's easier to say this in retrospect, but, like, do you think he got something from that experience of, like, grinding his way through overseas, getting that experience, maybe even playing that international style of basketball? And I mean, maybe people aren't as familiar, but Olympiacos is a big club. It's a really, really big deal.
Absolutely.
Right. And he did well there too, as well.
He did.
I'm not going to pretend like I watched the Olympiacos, you know, games, but I'm looking up the numbers. They're looking pretty good.
Kem did very well in Olympiacos, and he did very well in Turkey as well. I mean, but for him, he still, you know, Kem is that player that he's going to play his best no matter where he's at. And he always says that he feels blessed that he had that opportunity because it was completely different than what he learned when he was in North America. Just the style of play is different. So he did learn other ways to play. He did learn new moves, as we would say, and we would laugh about it. And it helped him mature as well as a player. Mm. So looking back at his experiences, they were devastating experiences. They're actually blessings because it helped him now develop more and helped him get to the NBA, which is where he wanted to be in the first place.
Can you take me through? So how did he get from Olympiacos to Orlando and then eventually, you know, really establish himself as an NBA player through Orlando?
That was a decision. I remember Kem getting a phone call and asking if he wanted to, because now don't forget, he had a 2-year contract in Greece. Mm. Now he had to either leave Greece and go to the Magic with no guarantees or stay and finish his year off with Greece. He's guaranteed that money, but who knows if the NBA will come knocking again. So he decided, like, all in all faith, I'm going to leave and I'm going to try my luck, because obviously he felt the Magic saw something in him for them to even call in the first place. And that's exactly what he did. And he will never look back at it and feel sorry for his decision. Scary decision, because at the end of the day,
that's very scary. Yeah.
Yeah. It's his livelihood, right? You know what I mean? So if he would have come and the Magic would have said, thank you very much, and no, what would he have done? He would have to now go back with his agent at the time and say, okay, now we have to find another contract, which we know he would have had a contract, but still, it's still hard when you're leaving something to go to something new and you have no idea what it is. But, and all in good faith, Kem said, no, I'm ready. And he went.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Orlando was good for him. I think there was like, I was in a lot of these Zoom calls with Kem after he became a Raptor. And there were a lot of conversations about, like, you know, what did Toronto allow you to do that Orlando didn't allow you to do? And I think maybe that the subtext of that was sort of just like, you know, what is Toronto doing better for you? Which I'm sure there were a lot more things, and we could talk about that as well. But I think Orlando gave him some great opportunities there. I think, you know, there was a role there. I think Steve Clifford really liked him, especially for his defense. And you know, unfortunately, Orlando kind of went in a different direction, and they, it seems like they're rebuilding, and they were good to let Kem go. And I think, you know, based on what he said, this is a dream for him to play for the Raptors. So for you, was that a dream for you as well to see your son on the Raptors?
Oh, absolutely. First, it was a dream for me to see him play in the NBA because that's what he really wanted. Mm-hmm. But now to go to our country's team, I mean, he was playing Team Canada, but now you're playing for the, you know what I mean, our country's NBA team. That's totally different. I mean, we used to watch the Raptors when he was younger. He used to watch it with his dad all the time. And, you know what I mean, I'm back with Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady days. And and that was so, you know what I mean, that was awesome back then. You never would have thought, or we never, ever would have thought, first of all, Kem would be in the NBA then. And then second of all, never thought that, you know what, he'd be wearing this uniform later on in life. Like, that just never came in our think abouts. So for me as a Canadian, absolutely, I'm so proud. And plus, as I've always followed the Raptors, regardless of where Kem was. I mean, when Kem was overseas, I was a Raptors fan. When Kem came back and he's playing with the Magic, I was still a Raptors fan. So
That's good to know. That's good to hear. Yeah. I like this.
I used to go to, of course, Cam's games. And when he would play the Raptors, it would be so funny because we'd be like, okay, clap really low for the Raptors. Right. And just scream for the Magic, you know? But you know what? We were just like, when we used to go with the family and friends, like 20 deep, we'd be like standing up and screaming for the entire game anyway, just because we were so blessed to be there. Because we're like, yeah, Raptors, you know, Canada. And then, yeah, Magic, Cam. And now moving forward, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Knock on wood, all goes well. It's going to be the same. Now we're going to be 60 deep.
Good, good. I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, we need is like, yeah, hopefully everything is like all good with the border and everything like that. And, you know, that's really outside the Raptors control and things like this. But no, I think that's going to be great. And I think, you know, one thing I've heard you say many times now is sort of like that 2019 experience. Obviously, the Raptors played Orlando in the first round. I got to say, Ken was pretty good. I got to say, the Magic bench played the Raptors bench pretty good. Pretty good, I have to say. But yeah, I mean, obviously, this is going to be a decision he makes in the offseason. And I think he's basically essentially said it himself. You know, free agency is, you just never know. So you don't want to speak too much. But it seems like he loves this opportunity here. And he seems like he has a special connection with Coach Nurse. Am I reading that right?
You are reading it spot on. So he really respects Coach Nurse. And this goes back from when he played for him, Team Canada. And he always said, Coach Nurse always allows me just to be me. And he allows me to exercise my talent and just to see what I can do on the court. And what I don't know, I'm going to learn. And he gives me that time to learn, or he shows me. So for him, he doesn't feel as micromanaged as he had quoted. You know what I mean? On the court, he felt like, okay, you know what, Kim, we respect your talent. Let's see it. Show us what you can do now. And it sort of goes back to what it was like in UNLV days. When I watch Kem play now, I'm like, wow, Kem is like really in his element. He's out there. He's doing his thing. He's doing what he knows to do best, right? It's not an overnight thing that he learned how to shoot or to do all these wonderful things. Now, don't get me wrong. He had a role with the Magic and he fit the role perfect. At one point, though, he was like, you know what? I want to just do more than this role. I don't want to be just that screener. I want to be able to score. I want to do more things. And at one point, this is, well, now he's with the Raptors. You know what I mean? So in the end, that was what he needed and that's what he wanted.
Yeah, and I think it was maybe surprising to us. Obviously, you've watched him closer than anyone in his life. But I think to even just like people who watch the NBA a lot, like I think a lot of people were surprised with how much Ken was able to expand his game. And it was like first few games, and it was like, wow, they keep finding him on the roll. And even if the third guy steps up, he's making all these great passes on the move. It's like, but, you know, his assist numbers in Orlando were low. And it's like, what is always there? And it was sort of like a feeling of, because it was new, it was sort of like, you know, you never know. Maybe this is some sort of temporary thing. But I think he really showed in this 2 months, you know, with the Raptors at the end of the season, it's just like, he kind of has chemistry with pretty much everybody, right? Obviously with Kyle, you know, he's a great passer, great point guard, but he had chemistry with Pascal, with OG, with Fred, with Malachi. Like, and when you have chemistry with everybody, that's when you know you're a really good player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm thrilled as a Raptor fan and as someone covering the team to that Kem is on the team. And obviously I'm hoping that relationship continues, but I wanted to go back to this point about, so his connection with Coach Nurse, 2019, I'll have to say, like, that 2019 squad that went to represent Canada in China and for the World Cup, it didn't have a lot of NBA players.
Right.
And Ken was one of the ones who really took the opportunity and ran with it and stuck it out, even when a lot of other names pulled out. What was the reason that, what really drove him to commit to that opportunity when other people, I wouldn't say turn it aside because people have their own situations, but other people didn't take that same chance.
Well, Kev's played with Team Canada, I think, since he was maybe 13 or 14. So for him, he took pride and still does in playing for his country. And just as much as he wanted to play in the NBA, is just as much as he wants to play in the Olympics. So he kept saying, "Mom, that's just where this is what I want to do. I need to add that to my bucket list." And for him, he has so much respect for the country. And he's like, "You know what? I don't want to drop out. If I don't have to, then I won't. And I'm never going to." So Kim always wants to put Canada first somewhere. You know what I mean? It's been a long time since the men's team has been playing in the Olympics, and he says, "You know, I really want to push as much as I can, and hopefully my efforts will mean something." And we're blessed that, you know, the opportunity is coming up again this year, and just hoping that all the players are healthy and able to do it, because it's a dream for our country to, you know what I mean, to play in the Olympics. So hopefully that will work, because and for him, it's really heartfelt. It always was.
Right, for sure. And I think, like, Kim was a good example of someone who, you know, maybe other players can sort of see that experience that he had and see it as one more reason to play in these tournaments. Obviously, the situation's going to be different. Contracts, you never really know what these situations. Some teams might push players away. So I really hate this idea of, like, always blaming the players for, like, not showing up to Team Canada or whatever.
Right.
But I do think that, like, you know, Kim's experience of 2019 was a real nice showcase as to, like, you know, he got to showcase a lot of what he's doing right now with the Raptors in that expanded role in China in 2019. And so I think, of course, the connection with Coach Nurse has really helped on that front as well. But I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it's going to be in Canada. We have the tournament. Yes. We just got to beat Greece and Turkey and Czech Republic. Like, come on, we could do that. I don't even think Giannis is playing. You know,
we can do it. Canada can do it. It is our time. It really is. Yeah. And just to go back to what you were saying about people blaming the players for their reasons not to play, like, you really don't know. There could be millions of reasons. It could be health reasons, family reasons, free agency reasons. Sometimes they're scared to play because they figure, hold on a second, free agency is coming up. I can't get injured, or I can't miss out on. There's tons of reasons. You know what I mean? I have to stay healthy. It's people say sometimes, and I'm just bringing this up because someone said it to me yesterday, why would players want to play Team USA or for any country because they're not getting paid for it? And I was like, I don't really think it has anything to do with the money. It really has to do with really playing for your country. And a lot of players want to do it, but sometimes there's a lot of circumstances that don't allow them to do it. So I don't think it's because it's not important, because who wouldn't want to play for their country? Just sometimes you just can't.
Exactly. I mean, that is mostly what they're getting from it, is like the experience of playing, obviously, with a lot of guys, right? That you probably play with coming up over the years, I'm sure, like, you know, under 16, under 17, under 13, like I'm sure a lot of these players know each other and want to have those same experiences again with that group of guys, but they're not getting paid. And we're talking about people who usually get paid millions of dollars to play basketball. So it's very hard to just be like, "Hey, you want to work for free?" But
and for so long, it's not like it's a week long.
Yeah, I know. Well, they had to go to Australia, and then that was like a few weeks, and then they went to China for a few weeks, and they come back. And of course, I was like right pressed up into training camp. I mean, it's a lot. It's a big commitment. So
when they went to Australia, it was winter.
That's right. Yeah.
It was winter. Cam was like, "It's cold here." Yes. He was like, "What? It's freezing here." And I laughed, like, "Freezing?" He goes, "Yeah, it's their winter." I'm like, "Really?" So it was just funny. You know what I mean? It was completely opposite. We're thinking, "Oh, you're in Australia. It's hot." No. It was so cold. So
no, that's I mean, I think we should really, like, really celebrate people who definitely choose to go.
For sure.
And I think that's definitely an extra point there. And I'm looking forward to seeing Kim first on the Raptors and on Team Canada. I know I'm not gonna ask you to commit because you are not Kim, and that wouldn't be fair. But I mean, I just think personally, I would very much like to see him, and I hope to see him as well.
I would too.
In this year, in this year, as with the Raptors, is there something from this experience that, you know, obviously you haven't been able to, well, I don't know if you have been able to actually, but has there been any sort of experiences dealing with the Raptors organization that has really stood out to you in this short amount of time? I know they really put an emphasis on celebrating family and trying to really include people. It makes a lot of space for people. And so I wanted to ask you about your experience dealing with the Raptors organization sort of behind the scenes so far.
fantastic. They're so kind. They reached out to me, hey, do you need anything? Or ask me a bunch of questions. And I, you know what I mean? And such a, what I loved was the communication and the dialogue. It was, it's always there. I know I can pick up the phone and say, hey, I have a question about this. Do you think you can help me or help Cam? And they're there. They're there. And it's never just one person. Now I have like 5, 6, 7 people that I know that I can call and just ask for help.
Oh, from... come on. You got to shout them out. You got to shout them out. Who are you dealing with?
Okay. So, well, there is Courtney Charles. Love, love, love Courtney. Amen. Thank you so much. Ray Marie, I don't remember her last name. Fantastic. Jen Taylor, Alex Orbach. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. He was helping me with vaccinations, which is important because in Canada, we have to wait so long to get vaccinated. We're in the US, it's 3 weeks. So I came, I'm actually in the US right now. I mean, I'm actually in Orlando in Kim's house and I'm fully vaccinated. So they assisted with that. Wow. Like because Kim said to me, hey, you know, I can get, my family can get vaccinated. And I said, how does this work? Well, I called Courtney and I'm here. So and all that to say, I know that I could just call anybody. I actually reached out to Coach Nurse and I said to him, I just want to tell you, thank you. For, you know what I mean? Making Cam feel comfortable yet again, you know what I mean? Because I had reached out to him. Well, we had spoken during the whole, Olympics. It's not the Olympics, when they were in Australia, before Team Canada. So when he came back, I had sent a message saying, hey, thank you for that video that they showed when the Magic played against the Raptors.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Show the Team Canada highlights. So I contacted MLSE and said, thank you. And then in comes Nick Nurse. And he was saying, hey, I just want to let you know that Cam is a great person. You know what I mean? He's likable. And I liked coaching him Team Canada. So now, you know, 2 years later, he's a Raptor. So I reached out again. And I'm saying, I just want to say thank you because your words mean so much to my son. And he was like, yeah, worries. So it's just nice, you know what I mean? And for me, the Raptors are the organization's fantastic. So I thank them all. And if I forgot anybody, well, I'm sorry, but you're fantastic too.
No, that's great to hear. And I hope everybody's in Toronto next year. We can all be in the building. I know, you know, very jealous, okay, because the media room in Scotiabank is just down the hall from like this big room that they have for the families of the players.
Okay.
And the media room, very unglamorous. All right. I'm there's nothing against the Raptors. Every media room is unglamorous. Nobody likes the media. But I do know the family members right there. And I'm sure, like, you know, I mean, I hope you get to enjoy all the facilities and all the experiences and everything like that. I'm sure, again, I know the Raptors are they're top notch with this stuff.
I hope so too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I'll see you at the arena next year. Obviously, now that you're fully vaccinated. Canada should be fully vaccinated by then. So yeah, we'll see. But
yes, get the Canadians back.
Yeah, seriously. I just wanted to ask you just a few more questions, not about Cam, because look, listen, it's not just about your kids, okay? It's about the people who made the kids. It's about the people who made the people that you see. And again, that's, I think that's something that's so cool about your podcast is like, you know, I think right now there's like it's a little bit late, but it's at least it's happening. There's this bigger push to put women's voices on, which I think is fantastic. And I think, you know, one part of that is just, you know, the mother's perspective. It's so unique, especially when you hear that part of it behind the scenes. Because I think, again, like I mentioned earlier, you get to hear about sort of what went into it. So I want to ask you some things about sort of what went into raising Cam. And I was listening to a few episodes. And one thing you keep mentioning is sort of like giving your kid, your son, that confidence to do things, to try things. You know, I think you were pushing him to try things on the basketball floor that, you know, eventually he did ultimately try. How much is giving your kid confidence a part of parenting?
Everything. So I don't know if you've noticed, whenever you hear Cam talk, whenever he does interviews, Cam always says confidence. He always uses that word. He always says, yeah, you know, I played today, you know, but you know what? People don't think I'm a threat, but you know, I'm getting more confidence. And I always tell him, stop saying that. Because you do have that confidence. Stop making yourself think that you don't. And that is something that I used to instill in him as a kid, because he never wanted to play basketball at the beginning, right? So when he started to play, I was like, wait a minute, you actually have talent here. And I'm not that mom that just sits there and says your kid is great at something and they're really not. You know what I mean? I'm that mom that would, okay, you have this talent. Let's exercise it. Let's make you better at it if you want to push it and, you know, move it forward and use it as a career someday. I didn't understand at the time really that basketball could be a career. To me, I would turn on the NBA, it's entertainment, and I would shut off the TV and go about my business. I didn't realize that. Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, wait a minute. Hold on, you know what I mean? So for me, looking back, I was always instilling him that confidence in him and saying, Cam, you're very good. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise and stop making you believe otherwise. Like, you're great. And not because you're 6 foot, whatever you were at the time, you're great because you have good coordination. You understand the game. You're pretty smart. You know what I mean? You understand what coaches need. Cam is that kid that would ask, hey coach, what do you need me to do on the court today? He's not that, oh, I'm really good. You know what I mean? I'm the star and I'm going to do what I want to do. You know what I mean? Cam is not that person. So for me, it was just always important for him to use your ears before you use your mouth. Listen to what they need first and then go out and give it to them and deliver. And that's just how it always was.
That's very smart. And I got to say, I was talking to my friend Katie, who interviewed you for, for a story on Dime, which was really great. And I did a lot of research just reading her story, and it was great. And she's awesome. She wanted me to ask more about your playing career, too, because I wanted to know how much game you gave Cam, because apparently you also played. Don't underplay your own skills, okay? Just because your son's in the NBA, you know, I'm sure you had game, too, or maybe you still have game.
I taught him everything. No, I don't have any game no more. Believe you me. Oh my God. No. So yeah, I'll start backwards and go, and you'll have to laugh at me, but I started playing again. It was 2014, which was hilarious. I was at a gym with my youngest son and he was playing basketball, and they said, oh, we want to have a pickup team with women. You used to play. Come on, Wendy, you go. I'm like, all right, I'm a guard. I'll ball. Okay. All that to say, yeah, whatever. Within 2 weeks, I went to Vegas to see Cam play a tournament and I was on crutches. So
what? Oh no.
And I was so mad. No. I was like, oh, and they were laughing at me saying that they're going to give me a cane and bling it so I could bring it to Vegas with me. So, but I did play basketball. I think I was maybe 10 when I started. And I played all the way to college. I was a point guard. Loved the sport. I really, truly did. It was everything to me. I mean, basketball was life. It was the one thing that I knew that I could do, but I didn't think professional, because at the time in Montreal, you didn't hear of professional women's team, WNBA, you never heard of that. So for me, it was, I'm going to play in Montreal and be the best I can be. And then I was pregnant with Cam, and for me, everything else just was, it's all about Cam.
Yeah. So this is what I asked for. That's what my mom says too. It's just like, you know, I had you, and then my life, you know, had to take a backseat. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, mom. But she's like, no, it's great.
It's great.
But also, but you owe me. And I'm like,
yeah, pretty much. I tell Cam all the time. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, you're welcome. No, but for me, basketball.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, I tell about. Yeah, you're welcome, Cam. But basketball for me was really important, and you know what? I'm proud that I was really, really good at it. I really was. And then later on in life, I just moved on to play softball, and I'm just a mean pitcher. But that came later on.
That's not bad. So even as a basketball, did you push him to, but you didn't specifically push him to basketball. You weren't like a LeVar Ball type parent. You're like, when you were envisioning having children, you're like, all right, I need to have these situations all set up for him. And this is his life goal. And from a baby, they're going to have a ball in their hands. You know, it wasn't like that for you. It was sort of just like, let my kid grow. And then eventually it's like, okay, you're pretty good at basketball too. Maybe you should, do it for a living.
You know what? You're absolutely right. For me, it was just, oh, he's good at this. Let's see what can come out of it. It wasn't like, okay, you're going to be fantastic because, you know, you need to get to school. You know, it's because a lot of parents would, you know what I mean? In Canada or for us, it's different. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, you're going to go to Dawson College or Vanier College in Montreal, and you end up at McGill and Concordia. Right. You know what I mean? We're not spending $25,000 and $35,000 a year. It was just whatever the, you know what I mean? Whatever the price was at the time, and we kept it moving. It wasn't, You know what I mean? I didn't think beyond that then until he started playing NCAA. And I was like, oh, wait, hold on. Now I'm like, play your best because you need a scholarship, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, the pressure's really on, man. Before it's like, all right, just make sure you get at least 80 in your marks. You can go to most schools, you know.
Yeah.
You know, get a scholarship. Yeah. So
yeah, I used to call him. Did you do your homework? Did you do your homework? Because you need to stay there. So you need a scholarship. You need to stay there. Yeah. I can't keep you there. You need to keep you there. Oh yeah. Do you need help? I made sure his homework was on point.
No, those are the best parents. Like my dad somehow still knows like most of like calculus and math. And I'm like, Dad, how do you still know this? You don't use this in your everyday job or anything like that. But no, I mean, you know, I think that's probably, obviously I don't have kids, but that's what I imagine being a parent is like. It's just, you know, whatever your kid needs, stepping it up and providing. And speaking of which, I think obviously one thing that everybody knows about, you know, sporting parents, you know, parents of athletes, is like, you're just committed to using most of your time to driving on long road trips, flying on long road trips. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe even taking trains or something like that. I don't imagine that happens, but maybe. Do you have like a favorite road trip memory that you have? Obviously, probably driving 7-8 hours to like Maine or something to get Kem to play at an AAU tournament or something like that.
Okay, first of all, every game was a away game for us.
Well, they weren't coming to Montreal.
Let me tell you, he played AAU games in Montreal. He did, but then after that, he started playing for a team in Rhode Island. So every game was an away game. So every road trip was 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And I remember they would call me and say, "Hey, so we have a tournament this weekend, and we need Kem to play." And I'm like, "This weekend?" They're like, "Yeah." So the game's tomorrow at 10. Okay. And I would literally be at work like, are they kidding me? And just get my purse and leave and go get Kem at school. And he'd be like, where are we going? Oh, get in the car. And we'd be running. And I was like, and yeah. And then 10 hours on the road going God knows where, driving in the dark, driving in fog.
In the dark.
In the dark. Yeah. Crying because I can't see, don't know where I am. And there was no GPS back then. I used to print the directions and highlight them so I could see them in the dark. And Kem
MapQuest?
MapQuest.
It's awful. How do we live before Google Maps? I don't understand.
Thank you. So yeah. And I mean, it was a lot. You know, I had to go to work and I had to print it so nobody can see it, and then go get a highlighter, and oh my goodness. And then I would be like, okay, Kem, hold this up. Oh, please. Kem would be sleeping. So are there any favorite road trips? Probably not. Kem would be that kid that would get into the car and within 5 minutes he is out. I would literally sing my way through the U.S. I would sing my way through Canada. Oh, yeah, because Kem would be sleeping and just get up when it's time to use the washroom or eat. And that is it. And how many more hours to where we're going? And I'd be like, I don't know, 5. Oh, my God. He'd complain like he was awake. And then he'd go back to sleep.
Now I feel self-conscious as an ungrateful child.
Well, that's it. And back then, it's not like I could talk to people because at the time it was too expensive for me to talk to somebody, you know what I mean, through the car while I was on my way. Are you kidding me? So it was just all about listening to the radio and singing and trying to get in whatever station I could. Yeah, it was pretty boring.
Yeah.
Pretty uneventful.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's tough. Was there like one specific tournament that you went to that really got people that maybe Kem really, you know, opened some eyes, or it was particularly memorable, or he had like a 70-point game or something like that? You never know. AAU stories are weird.
You know what? All of his tournaments were memorable, and the reason why I say that is I remember having conversation with Kem, and I say this all the time, because again, Kem didn't really want to play. Because he didn't have that, like we were saying before, confidence. And I said, come on, Kem. I said, don't worry. You're going to be great. And he would say, if I'm not great or something happens, I'm going to get so mad at you. I said, okay, whatever. He never got mad at me. So we laugh about it now. And I'm like, see, you never got mad. You were great. So every tournament we went to, he always stood out. He was always that player that the coaches and the team depended on, because Kem is a team player. He really is. He just loves on everybody on the team. He's not that guy that he'll never sit there and say, it's all about me. Never. I remember Kim playing on an AAU team, and they were driving to Florida, and another team they were merging with were flying. And they said, well, you know what? We're going to give Kim a plane ticket. And Kim refused. He said, no, I'm going to drive with my players. He says, I'm good. And he drove and complained all the way to Florida because it was like 23 hours. But that's just me. Yeah, he complained the whole way. But for him, it was just the fact that he was with them. So, and it's so funny because sometimes when I speak to the coaches, they always say, wow, we have memorable moments with Kim, but they won't tell me.
All right, you got to get them on the podcast, and then you know what, people really do tell the truth on a podcast, so that's what you got to do. You got to get them on and grill them. I want to ask this too, even though I've heard you answer it, but I think this is an important question to ask. Like, from as a parent, you know, obviously your son is a very, very public person, and there's a lot of conversation around him and his performances, just as with any athlete. How hard is it to maybe resist seeing that conversation, resist joining in? Because you know how people are online. People are very unreasonable, especially when they watch sports, especially once a bunch of angry dudes watching sports, you know, I don't imagine any Raptor fans are upset at Kim. One day it'll happen, but it hasn't happened yet, right? Because it comes for everybody. But were there any like angry Orlando Magic fans? And honestly, it's just like, is it hard to sort of, to see that happen, you know, around someone who's so public?
Of course it is. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of the moms about this, and I always say to them, what do you do? Like, what do you say? And some of the moms are like, I can't even go on social media because it'll be on. And some other moms are like, oh, I don't care. I actually do care, but I bite my tongue a lot. So, and I mentioned this yesterday, and I didn't get in trouble, but the other day, I laugh about this all the time. The Raptors made a post with Kim. Kim was wearing the Montreal Soccer Club jersey.
Right.
And the caption was awkward. And I knew it was a joke. I thought it was funny. But I replied, well, how's it awkward? Why can't he represent Montreal? And people took it as, it's just a joke. It's just a joke. And I'm like, I know. And I laughed and I said, maybe I should have put hearts and emojis and the laughter one, I don't know, in my quote. And I was thinking, Lord, I've become that mother. I had made myself that mom that just couldn't keep quiet. And one guy was like, sheesh, lady.
He says, oh my God.
And I'm like, okay, he called me lady. And then and some other was like, relax, man. When people tell me relax, that just sets me over the edge.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's but awful. I just,
well, first off, why would you even be upset about it? You know, you're not some kind of like unreasonable person. Like, you're just making a joke, you know, like,
yeah,
that's the thing. You can't, it's hard. It's very hard making jokes on social media.
It is. And then someone said to me, it's just funny. He said, because you tagged the Raptors in it. I said, it's not that. I just replied. First of all, I'm not a tweeter. Okay. I don't know what I'm doing. So it was just funny. And I'm like, it wasn't an attack against anybody. So like I said yesterday, the day before that, I'm saying it today, it was no attack on anybody. So if I offended anybody, sorry, but I was just kidding. And I still wanted an answer to my question. Why is it awkward? But anyway.
I mean, you know, it's what can I say? It's a fire kit. Like the impact kit looks really good. The blue and black, it's really not bad.
Well, even funnier, they sent Kim a new jersey. Montreal club.
Oh, word?
It was hilarious. Came in the mail the other day. And I laughed and I said,
Was it not the updated edition or what happened?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay.
So I thought it was hilarious. And then when Kim came back, I showed it to him. I was like, you have to put this on and take a picture and put it on social media. And he's like, yeah, this is funny. So it's just all in love, right? I mean, some people take it too far at other things when they say, oh, your kid sucks or your kid's this. And I'm like, you know what? That is where it just becomes rude. And there's just no need to attack an athlete because you don't know what they're going through. You have no idea emotionally or physically what a lot of players face day in and day out with that stress to be perfect. So for me, when I see those, I just get off. I just like, okay, never mind. And I skip it. And it's good if it's on Twitter because then I can never find it again because I'm the worst Twitter ever. I can't tweet anyway. So I'll never probably see it again anyway, so it doesn't matter. But for me, yeah, I told Kim the other day, I think I became that mom for 1 minute. And he's like, stay off of it, mom. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure it's hard for the players too. And then, like, you know, people go out of bounds. I'm not even gonna lie, I go out of bounds, you know, but that sometimes you just like, when you watch them on TV, you're like, you know, and then you say something and you're like, this is stupid. Why did I say this? I don't know this person. I like this person, you know, but that's the nature of online discourse, I guess, unfortunately. Last question I was going to ask you just about this in particular was, what advice do you wish you had earlier in your life as a parent? Because I know one of the goals of your podcast is you really want to give advice to other basketball parents, other sporting parents, you know, men and women, just about the experiences and sort of give them some game and some experience and just some advice. Is there some general advice that you would have really liked to have early in your life as a parent?
Absolutely. To spend my time wisely and differently. Everything for me was such a rush. I'm that go, go, go person. You know, two kids, one running to football, one's basketball. You know what I mean? You had Boy Scouts, you had church, you had all kinds of activities. So I never had that time to really stop and decompress and say, okay,
right.
Hold on one second. Let's just make a little bit of sense of this, because you're going so quickly and you don't really realize where you're going. So with Cam, when he started playing basketball, I wish I had a little bit more time to sit there and really make that path. My other son, Dre, he played football. So with them meshing together, I'm like, okay, one has to go to a private school. Another one has to go to private school for basketball. One's for football. Okay. And it was a lot. So I just wish I had more time that, you know what I mean? That 25th hour maybe in a day. So just so that I could,
right.
You know what I mean? Just reflect and say, okay, guys, you're going to go here. You're going to go there without it being a rush. Because to me, time is everything, right? So I always say, people, don't waste it. You know, every minute of the time that you waste, you can't get back. So use what you're doing in the best effective way that you can. And this is something that now I live by, especially with my show. You know, maybe I'm talking to these moms, you know what I mean? I have 45 minutes to an hour with this lady. I got to ask, you know what I mean? I could use this time to ask the best questions, because there's fans out there that want to know so much. So for me, time is everything, and everything that we do in life.
That's great advice. And yeah, I mean, it's something my mom says to me too. She's like, I just spent all my life to take care of you and all this other stuff and running my own stuff. And I'm like, now I have all this, now I'm like 50 and I got to figure out all this time. And I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, mom. I hope I take that lesson when I'm a parent. I want to ask you two more questions, both about Montreal. I think number one, I want to ask about basketball in Montreal. So obviously we had this great game earlier this season, Raptors, OKC. You got Lou Dort on one end, who was, I mean, man, he had like 25, I think, in the first quarter. He was going off.
He was on fire.
And then you got, Chris on the other end, matching him shot for shot. Okay. And then you got Kem in the middle, you know, just in between the whole thing. And it was such a great event. And obviously on the broadcast, they shouted Montreal so many times. The 514, it was like continuous. I thought they were talking about a streetcar in Toronto. Where did all this talent in Montreal come from? Like, has this always been the scene? Obviously, you said you played a lot in Montreal as well. Is this a scene that's always been there and it's finally having its moment now?
Absolutely. Basketball is such a great, great sport. And there's so much talent in Montreal. It was always there. The difference is that there wasn't a lot of scouts, just say, when Kem played or even when I played. So there really wasn't any direction. It was like, okay, you're playing high school, then you're going to play college, then you'll play university. And then there is an adult league somewhere that you can find to play. And that's pretty much it. Or that was the click that I learned. So like I was saying, when you're watching NCAA on TV, never once do you think, you know, a Montreal kid could be there, because you know what I mean? They weren't. So that means something. Now, whole other spectrum. Now we have players that are opening doors. We're opening doors now, or they're opening doors for the city. They're opening doors for the amateurs that are there that have talent. You know what I mean? It's nothing new. Montreal always had great, great, great players. It's just a direction that they were coached to go to or shown is what was lacking in the past. So now it's like, you can go get a scholarship and play and possibly make it a professional platform, if you will. And that to me, I appreciate, because it's just so different now than it was just say 10 years ago. And I remember Kim, he went to visit Providence as one of the schools. And I remember someone was interviewing him and saying, how was your visit at school, et cetera. And I remember Kim saying, you know what? You never know. Maybe I'll choose Providence, he says, or maybe some other kid from Montreal will be here one day. And he says, at the end of the day, I'm going to do what I can do to bring Montreal on the map again. I'll never forget him saying that, because I was like, huh, okay. Well, he recognizes that, you know what I mean? Some of the players that he played with on his team or played against on other teams in Montreal were great, great players. They just didn't have the same opportunity that he had. But it doesn't mean that they're not fantastic players, right?
Yeah, and I will say this for Montreal, though. I think, obviously, like Toronto, the GTA region, obviously produced so many players, back-to-back number one overall picks. The one thing I will say with the Montreal thing is that NBA teams need to send more scouts to Montreal and Quebec in general, because there is talent there, and we're seeing it with Lou, we're seeing it with Kim, we're seeing it with Chris. Why are all these people going undrafted? These guys were all should be first-round picks, second-round picks, you know what I mean? Like, and we were seeing it in Ontario. People are definitely coming to Ontario, but maybe come just a little bit further, go up the highway. You know, it's nice in Montreal. It's, you know, really a world-class city. It's a beautiful place. You know, spend some time. You know, where are the runs in Montreal? Like, where are people, like, you know, like if you're a baller in Montreal, where are you going?
Which team?
I guess which team, like, or even just like which gym, like, has the best runs or things like that. Like, I'm sure there's a few AAU teams down there as well.
There is, but you know me, I'm going to shout out Brookwood Elite, right? I mean, that's where Kim and Lou played. Both of them played, right? I mean, so for me, obviously, if they produce two NBA players, you know that Brookwood could produce more. I mean, it's a fantastic organization. My youngest son played there too. So much talent there, and the coaches are fantastic. Kim first started playing Montreal United when he first started. And then there's other teams as well. But for me, I got to resonate with the teams that my kid played for, right?
And
obviously, they produce NBA players. So
It clearly worked.
No, but again, there's no disrespect to any other team in Montreal, because to me, everything they do, whether they're out in Saint-Michel or whether they're in the West Island, Saint-Lazare, it doesn't matter where they are. The coaching in Montreal now, they really stepped up, and there's so much coming out of there. So I can just say, like, watch out, world, because you're going to see some more Quebec faces coming soon.
Okay, great. We're looking forward to that. And then the last question, this is super selfish, not even for anyone out there. My little brother, who is 10 years younger than me, is through first year at McGill, but unfortunately he had to do remote learning because, obviously, but hopefully this coming semester, he will be in Montreal and living there. And listen, I'm very worried for him. He's only 18. He's turning 19. He's just a little baby. He needs recommendations as to what to do in Montreal, where to eat. If you can just give me one, like, you know, hidden gem of a restaurant in Montreal that you really love, and maybe one hidden activity. Don't tell me, like, oh, go to the old city and you know, eat the beaver tail or whatever is over there. And, like,
beaver
you know,
go tail. No, you gotta eat poutine. You have to have a poutine. Kim will tell you, you go to Montreal and you have to have a poutine. Oh my God, if I were to say anything else, he would kill me. So, for me, I love Caribbean food and I love Greek food.
Okay.
And there's actually a restaurant that I found just before I moved out of Montreal last year. And it's called Sud-Ouest, which is Southwest. And it's on Notre Dame Street near Atwater. Oh my God. They make the best jerk chicken wraps ever. But there is I'm a caterer girl. I have a lot of caterers in Montreal that would actually bring me food, to be honest.
Food.
Yes. Okay. The Best Bite Catering. So I would tell them, come to Montreal. What about this? Yeah. All right, let me make it for you and stuff like that. So I was always blessed, right? You know what I mean? So we're foodies. And activity.
Everyone in Montreal's got to be a foodie. Like, Montreal is such a good, it's like world-class food. Like, it's like, there's so many people that come to Montreal. Like, there's such a blend of culture. Like, I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but like, you know, like the Moroccan food, like you got the islands, the Haitian food. Like there's just, you can have anything you want. Like last time I was in Montreal, I ate crickets, like gold crickets in some sort of Mexican restaurant. I don't know, man, but it was great.
Anyway, I don't know if I should say ew. I don't know if I should.
You know, it was unique. It was unique.
Yeah, you see, I'm that girl that, yeah, I'm not that adventurous. So, yeah, crickets I wouldn't do. Activities. Okay, so I'm scared of everything. However, zip lining, OMG. You got a zip line. That to me is just like the most liberating thing ever. Montreal is known for its scootering. You can pick up a scooter anywhere. I'm sure you can do that across the country now. Okay. Man, pick a scooter and just buzz through the town. There's so much to see in Montreal. It really is. It's a beautiful, beautiful city. And we're not, again, we're not talking about going to Old Montreal. We're just saying in the city. I mean, like you're saying, you could find restaurants anywhere as you're scooting along. You can find anything. I mean, there's parks. There's a lot of nature walks you can do. I'm all about nature. Mm-hmm. So for me, and then the party scene, if you like to party, come on now. Montreal is where it's at.
Well, I was going to say, last time I was there, it was definitely for a bachelor party. So
you know what? I work in the hotel industry. And you know how many people will call me and tell me that, yeah, so we want to plan a bachelor party in Montreal. And I would laugh. I'm like, where are you calling from? And oh, yeah. Montreal is the city for
absolutely
lots of fun. I don't know if it's the Canadian Vegas, but
you know what? I guess. Yeah, I was gonna say Canada doesn't really have a Vegas. That's a little unfortunate, you know. But if it is close to, I mean Montreal, I mean the Strip there. I mean there's a lot that you can do and a lot you can see. So hopefully my brother's not going to do that stuff, but you know, definitely.
I forgot it wasn't about your brother. Okay, so tell him.
Whatever.
There's a church right next to McGill. Okay. That he can go to.
The classroom is here. Yeah. The lecture hall's here.
Yeah, you live
here.
The church is across the street. Yeah, yeah.
And the church. There you go. Just go to the four places. You're good.
That's it. And the library. Can't forget the library.
You can't forget the library.
Yeah. Don't go anywhere else. Yeah.
Enjoy Montreal. No, seriously, Wendy, this is such a great conversation. I'm having a great time. And I really want to thank you for your time. You know, as you mentioned, like your time is very valuable, but I really wanted to, you know, just have you on and talk about your show and talk about Kim and, you know, and just honestly wish you success with the podcast because it's really great. I think for me, like the first time I heard one, I was like instantly, I got to share this to Twitter. I got to let people know.
And I know
a lot of people caught on because it was such a good product. Like people really, really enjoyed the show, enjoyed the vibe of the show. And you are so well prepared. And I know it definitely takes a lot of work to book guests too. As a podcaster, it's like the worst part, but it just takes a long time. They got to work on their schedule. Then you got to get the tech. Then you got to get the time. Then you got to get the questions. Then you got to get the recording, the video, and like all the other stuff
for one episode. So,
exactly. No, it's not like maybe having a baby, but it's, you know, it's like having a very small technical baby, but
it is. Yeah. And you're right. You know what? It does take a lot of work. And at the beginning it was tough because I had some moms that were afraid and I would laugh and I'm like, you're afraid. I'm afraid. Like, get on that plane. Cause at the beginning, you know what I mean? I was flying them right? And then it just changed to the Zoom platform. So it's different now. Right. But when you're saying, no, for me, I guess it was how am I going to get people to listen or to even look, you know what I mean? Look, watch it on YouTube because I wanted people to see who is this mother? What does she look like? If you were to bump into her on the street in Philadelphia or wherever, you should know that this is this player's mom. Moms are very important. And that is what I wanted to create is a platform for the mothers to get respect and not just the player. You know what I mean? The players came from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So this is what everybody needs to know. The backstory and the person who actually, you know what I mean? Show respect for the person that brought these players into the world. You know what I mean? So I laugh at it all the time. I'm like, listen, know who we are, man. Because we got stories too. Our boys or girls, you know what I mean? it would have been hard for them to do it without their parents behind them. And you know what I mean? And a mother's love and the nurture is important. And that's what Courtside Bonds is all about. So thank you for enjoying the show and taking your time and listening to some episodes. To me, one episode at a time, you know what I mean? I'm learning every day. I'm doing the best I can. And for me, Courtside Moms just needs to grow. And I want to touch all the fans. I want to touch as many parents as I can who have amateur players and have questions and want to know, how do I get my child to be a professional athlete? And hopefully within some of the episodes they listen to and they hear our journeys, at least we'll give them an idea as to what to do. So that's what Courtside Moms is also about. So thank you for taking your time and listening to a show or two or three, or hopefully seven.
I was gonna say, I definitely binged a few. I didn't want to gas you up too much, but yeah. No,
that was definitely, I'm gonna start asking you questions. Yeah.
I mean, you know what? I might be a fan, but no, seriously, thank you for your time. And to listeners, thank you for listening to this episode. And I'll be back with another episode later this week. Thank you.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.